God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. Now, I just heard the intro for the show, and it reminded me that I have not answered a question. A couple people have written into the show to ask, hey, it says that you worked in Hollywood and tech, but what is EIB? I should have answered that. It stands for the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. That was Rush Limbaugh's network. That's what that means. I was gifted to do that for many years, filling in for Rush. So I just have been late answering that question. President Trump went back to Capitol Hill. This is a funny moment. I'm not one who is into popcorn and politics. I don't consider politics entertaining. I consider it to be a nasty, godless business with some godly people in it. And I happen to think God uses politics. He uses all things for his good. But there is a sort of funny nature to this, because there were Republicans there who can't stand President Trump, and they needed to go play the game. Some didn't. I'm no fan of Mitt Romney. In fact, I have a theory there is no such thing as Mitt Romney. There is a series of position papers that 27, 28-year-old, sometimes even 35-year-old staffers give him, and those are the things Mitt strongly believes until a next staffer comes along and says, now you strongly believe this. But Mitt does strongly believe he should have been president, not President Trump. But I do give him credit for not going, to not go pretend. There were others who didn't, and there were people there who were pretending to support President Trump. They're understanding he's the nominee for their side. But it's also funny because the left, Nancy Pelosi and others, are pretending to be deeply afraid that President Trump was there. Horribly afraid. It's all pretense. There is a quality to American politics that has become so consistent that it's almost easy to miss it. It's performing. It's a play. Nancy Pelosi goes on TV and she pretends to be concerned about the ethics of the Supreme Court. That's a pretense. She's a deeply unethical person. The Congress of the United States is deeply unethical. But they play act. Every year, Merrick Garland, the paper bully who gets to run the Department of Justice, pretends that officers were killed on January 6th. Every year. He gets up and he reads a teleprompter and he pretends to care about the officers, none of whom were killed on January 6th. It's pretense. It's acting. Here's one of the things that really concerns people about President Trump. He's not acting. He's not. President Trump says the things he believes. Now, in defense of people who criticize President Trump, President Trump's beliefs often change given the person to whom he last spoke. That's one of his failings. We all have them. There are some principles that President Trump seems to hold true to. One of them, or many of them, evolve around business. For instance, if you want businesses to come back, lower the tax rates. Make it cheaper to do business here than to pay tax accountants to move your companies offshore. That's a core belief of his. Makes sense. He's a businessman. So when President Trump went back to the Capitol and he spoke, and of course there were people play acting on both sides, there were other people who were legitimately terrified of President Trump because he's not acting. And then there's this. He's been radicalized. I believe this. I believe that he has been put through an enormous attack on his family and in lawfare. And he's saying now, he said, well, we need to let it go. I don't want to go around arresting a bunch of people and I can't go get revenge. But I don't know if I believe that. I'm hoping for somewhere in the middle. I'm hoping for godly justice. I'm hoping for actual justice. So here it was. President Trump was back on Capitol Hill yesterday.
I just want to thank the Republican Senate, and I want to thank also the House. We met as you know, with the full House, Republican House today, and we had a tremendous meeting with them also, and there's great unity. Very similar, different topics, actually, but not that different. And there's one thing in common. We want to make America great again. We have to get elected. We have to take this beautiful place, and we have to make it really something very special again. Right now, it's not special.
Yeah, it's special, but in a negative way. Capitol Hill, speaking about special in a negative way. This is another reason that people who firmly fear Trump, they do it because they don't believe he's acting. If President Trump got it in his head that the job of the president would to be to do what the Congress is pretending it can do to the Supreme Court, that would really frighten people. Here's what I mean. If it got in President Trump's head that he could become the anti-corruption politician, the anti-corruption president, and he were to use the gift God has given him most profoundly, this is the gift of speech and persuasion and entertaining crowds and drawing them in, lighting up ideas, using phrases like make America great again. If he became the anti-corruption president, he could actually create enough pressure to actually change the most corrupt body in the country, which is the Congress, to actually change it. For instance, he could go talk about the portfolios of Republicans and Democrats. He should. Republicans who are obviously insider traders. He should. He should talk about the trials he's just been put through for a bookkeeping error or deception. One bookkeeping error or deception. 34 felonies. And he could do this through caring and fairness. Those are the two words that animate moderates. President Trump could say, you know, Americans have spent all this time filling out all these tax forms and government digging through every little bank deposit they've ever made. And they shouldn't have to do this one up here in this body. We have people who are clearly doing things that would put me in prison or put anyone else in prison. And it's called insider trading. And here's the way it works. This is not fair for Americans. This is not caring and fair when we've got Americans trying to pay the bills and we have a Congress member join. And then 6 years later, they had a net worth of $200,000. Now they're worth $20 million. On a salary of $175,000 a year? This isn't caring. It's not fair. Wow, the potency of that. Democrats are only pretending to do this. Dick Durbin has worked in the most corrupt body in America for decades, and he pretends to want ethics rules for the Supreme Court.
The court can address these issues itself. The court could have issued a stronger code of conduct in the first place. It could revise its own code of conduct today. But Chief Justice Roberts repeatedly refuses to use his authority and power to implement a binding code of conduct for the Supreme Court. Until he does, Congress will continue our legislative efforts.
Your legislative efforts will come to naught. Dick Durbin knows this. These are co-equal branches. The presidency has no more power than the Supreme Court, who has no more power than Congress. Now they have power over different things. The figurehead is, for our great misfortune, and may God protect our troops, he is to be called commander-in-chief. He can't command everything or be a chief of anything other than corruption, but that's what the presidency contains. Congress can, the House can create budgets and levy taxes. The Senate can sponsor treaties, sign treaties, and have judicial overview. And then, of course, the Supreme Court can decide if a law is constitutional. So Congress can't impose this on the Supreme Court. That would require a constitutional amendment. Dick Durbin knows this. Dick Durbin could be one of the sponsors of actual fighting corruption within Congress. He won't because he benefits from it. See, the corruption, if President Trump were to become the anti-corruption politician and the anti-corruption president, he could hand that on. And it would also get closer to making us a godly nation. God abhors corruption or lying. Chris Hayes on MSNBC would like you to believe crime in American cities is down.
Look at what has happened with the homicide rate. In 2020, when, right, Donald Trump was president, he ushered in, under his presidency, the largest ever one-year jump, spiking 30%. By 2023, the homicide rate had tumbled 19% to 5.3 homicides per 100,000 people. New data from the FBI shows the rate continues to drop off dramatically, down another 26% in the first quarter of 2024 from the same time period last year.
So Chris Hayes on MSNBC leaves some things out. For instance, funny thing happened back in 2022. The FBI decided to drop some cities from crime reporting. New York City, Los Angeles, and other big cities. 10 of them, I think. Just dropped them. We're not going to have them in the statistics. That explains the drop in crime. Then there's also this. The lockdown, the medically useless, deadly, politically motivated lockdowns, did nothing to stop the virus. It wasn't intended to. Everybody knew it wouldn't stop the virus. But what did it do? It created massive pressure on people who suddenly couldn't work, whose kids couldn't go to school. It left idle times on people's hands. And there were people like me who said, hey, when this stuff is tried, people end up committing suicide and killing one another. There was also, of course, then the organized, top-down, Black Lives Matter Incorporated push to get cops murdered, which worked. Then there's this. Just this past couple weeks in Washington, D.C., we've seen what are clearly homicide cases dropped from prosecution or lowered to such a degree that it becomes farcical. Alvin Bragg took felonies and turned them into misdemeanors. Wow, look, murder is not manslaughter. In separate countries like Washington and California, you get good luck finding gang crimes called murder. The cases are being dropped down, such as the case with burglary and other crimes. Charges being dropped. When you do that, funny thing, look, crime's down. When crime is legal, crime goes down. I mean, the acts of violence don't go away. We all see that. Perhaps at the core of all of this is the difference between Trump supporters and Biden supporters on the importance of marriage and children. People who support President Trump, 59% of them, put a priority on marriage and children. Biden supporters, it's 19%. Some of that could be age. Some of it is certainly this. The left has made a business of destroying families because the left seeks power all in, all throughout, over everything. And functional families have held this country up firmly for centuries. Decades, I should say. Two centuries. They know this. They know that they can break apart the family, that unit, that atomic unit. The head of the family will become the state. And again, we're back. President Trump's on Capitol Hill. People don't know if he's acting. I think he's not. And we live in performative politics, where Joe Biden gets to pretend to be proud of his son. Or is he? Is Joe Biden truly proud of Hunter? I mean, you can love your kid, your adult child, who is a crackhead, a meth head, a cocaine addict, someone who sexually abuses women, probably sexually abuses children, who engages in sex trafficking, bribery, and influence peddling illegally. Are you really proud of that? And what does it say about Joe Biden if he is proud of that? That may be the biggest divide of all. And you'll notice that this isn't just at an American level. It's also true globally. We'll talk about this with the help of the boss lady of the EU, Ursula von der Leyen. She has a deep, deep fear. What she fears is borders, language, and culture. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples' View. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. This theory that people who worship the state, I mean, some of them don't know they do that, but it's evident in their fruits, that they have at their heart this great, great fear that this is it. This confuses me. In the day before, the days before, when I was not discipled, I didn't walk with the Lord. In fact, man, when I lived in Salt Lake City, Utah, I was as far from the Lord as I've ever been. I mean, really far. And it was interesting because at that time period, I had a deep, deep case of necrophobia where I was terrified of dying. And in fact, it was so bad, I would wake up in the middle of the night, and if the thought occurred to me that one day I will die, I would have to jump out of bed and run around the house. Like, it was so bad, slapping my face, trying to get myself out of this thought, just panicked. I won't exist. And as I became discipled, I went through the process of coming back to the Lord Jesus and ultimately becoming discipled and surrendering to the Lord, I can no longer conjure the fear of death. In fact, it goes so far as when I'm with fellow Christians and they talk about being 89, 90 years old and wanting to sustain their life on earth, I legitimately ask, why? Now, I understand life's a gift and we shouldn't look at that as anything other than a gift from God, and we're here for a purpose. I got that, but wait a minute. Why would you want to continue to live in a hospital bed? I don't want that. I would pray that the Lord would take me beforehand. By the way, God's told me he's not going to do that. Oh, he did. God told me, until you learn to be loved biblically, I will make you live into your hundreds until you can gain the humility to be loved biblically by other men in a biblical giving sense, a sense of humility. So I see people who worship the state, and I think it might be because they believe this is it. So they're grasping a thing. Rather than letting go of a thing, they're grasping a thing. They need to have all of it here now. Now, that certainly goes to the notion of being libertine and I have to experience all this stuff now because one day I'm going to be dead. So why not do it all? After all, there's no God. You can see some of these behaviors in people who live solely in the flesh because it's the only thing that thrills, because they cannot imagine an eternity of thrill, of walking with the Creator, of knowing everything that the Creator chooses for us to know in heaven, which is far more than we know now, of never hurting, of never being broken, of complete satisfaction. They can't imagine it. But here they can imagine rush after rush after rush. I think this is particularly true for people who God has allowed to have positions of power. I think they see as the only thing they will ever create being rules and controls over other people. So they worship the state, they don't know it. And it strikes fear in their hearts when ordinary folks can look at them and go, you're lying. For instance, the boss lady of the EU is responsible for the massive influx of immigrants into the Europe who hate Europe. She has imported attitudes and behaviors that the countries of Europe have lost countless lives fighting against. The attitudes of Hamas and the Taliban. She's imported people like that and forced these countries to accept people like that. People who hate them and want them dead. People who hate their constitutions and want them destroyed. People who want to have a Muslim theocracy. A religious dictatorship run things. The predictable pushback on this is from people who've lived in Europe for many, many generations saying, we don't want this. And ordinary Europeans are looking at her going, this isn't about cultural enrichment. This is about power. This is about shaking us. This is about making us governable by dividing us. We see you. Europeans saying, no, we choose not to back an EU that wants to force us to buy laboratory-made fake meat by destroying farms. We see you. We see you forcing us to back this war between Ukraine and Russia when we don't think Ukraine is a government worth backing? The people are a different issue. The government is corrupt. It terrifies these people who worship government and then I think want to be worshipped. So listen here. This is the autocratic woman who heads the EU, Ursula von der Leyen, and she has a deep fear of borders, language, and culture.
And let there be no doubt what's at stake in these elections. Our peaceful and united Europe is being challenged like never before by populists, by nationalists.
Populists and nationalists. And she goes on to say that they spread hate from behind their keyboards. So peaceful Europe. Russia and Ukraine at war. Farmers forced to take their tractors and trailers into major European cities to protest being told that they have to destroy their stocks of livestock. Their heads of livestock, not to sell, but because the people who want to make fake meat need you out of the way. Being told that if you don't comply with this, we're going to outlaw you from ever farming or ranching again in Europe. You or your family will never be allowed to do this again. And they're spreading hate from behind keyboards to say, no, we're not going to do this. See, when you worship government, absent God, what exactly is the benchmark for hate? If we were to look at the Bible, we can look at the benchmark for love. Love is patient and kind. It's not self-serving. Seeks to serve, not be served. It's not loud. It's not boastful. It's not angry. It's long-suffering. It's gentle. It's honest. But when the benchmark is government, what is love? It's control. Well, we're making you take in these migrants because we love you. We love ourselves. If you take a comparison of their fruits and you simply go to what are the desires of the flesh, you already know these people. And you can already see worship of government is worship of flesh. Government is rules on paper enforced by people. It's worship of flesh. You could say, well, the Bible, that's words on paper. Yeah, except they came from God. So they're words on paper expressing the thoughts of the Almighty, the Eternal, who's simply saying, heaven is going to contain people who want to be more like me, want to be godly. Hell is going to contain people who wanted to be more like they were, who wanted to invest further in the flesh, further in control, further in anger. That's where they wanted to invest. These are the treasures they built up. Now they can enjoy for an eternity doing nothing but being around souls like that, ruled by Satan, who delights in ruling you. See, that's the dividing line, isn't it? If you look at people in power, and you see them acting, as we talked about in the first segment. They go on TV and they perform. Nancy Pelosi went on TV and performed an act. She said she's deeply concerned that President Trump projects. He says that Joe Biden's corrupt, but he's corrupt. He says that Joe Biden is forgetful, but he's forgetful. Corruption. Nancy Pelosi pretending to care about corruption has to be one of the most disturbing acts I've seen, because she's good at it. Nancy Pelosi is clearly corrupt. And when people speak behind closed doors, the Bible tells us what's whispered in the dark will one day be shouted from the rooftops. When they speak behind closed doors and they think it's not going to make it out, you'll get these moments of truth. Nancy Pelosi admitted effectively that she was partly to blame for opting out of agreeing to President Trump's request for National Guard troops guarding the Capitol on January 6th.
We have responsibility, Terry. We did not have any accountability for what was going on there, and we should have. This is ridiculous. You're going to ask me in the middle of the thing when they've already breached the inaugural stuff that should we call the Capitol Police? I mean, the National Guard? Why weren't the National Guard there to begin with?
They thought that they had sufficient resources.
No, there's not a question of how they had, but they don't know. They clearly didn't know, and I take responsibility for not having them just prepare for war.
In her defense, behind the scenes, she takes responsibility. Behind the scenes. In front of the camera, she acts. $20 million in acting for the January 6th committee when she there took responsibility. After all, President Trump had offered the National Guard. Now, what's interesting to me that adds a complexity to this is that woman, you probably heard, was actually wearing her woke mask in her car. Maybe she actually believed those things helped. Except how could she? Because she didn't wear it in Congress. God uses the simple things to confound the wise and the weak things to confound the powerful. The simple things. Nancy, if that woke mask is protecting you in your car, it would have protected you in Congress. Nancy, if that woke mask wasn't necessary in Congress, it's not necessary in your car. Nancy, the American people don't get to engage in insider trading. The supposedly weak, you shouldn't be allowed to do it. Every time you turn to the Bible and compare it to politics, I think you're going to come away with saying, wait a minute, there's nothing godly in American politics. There are godly people, but they're not in great positions of power. And when they are, they're simply not effective. Mike Johnson is a godly man. He serves the Lord Jesus. About that, I've no doubt. He simply isn't able to take the wise as a serpent role. Not that I can tell. Now, Nancy Pelosi, having been caught saying these things, having been caught taking responsibility for January 6th, which is a virtuous thing to do, she then went on TV to act like, oh, it's all Trump. In fact, just recently, Pelosi went to MSNBC so Nicole Wallace could help the great lady read her lines trying to walk back her admission.
Why do you think this is stirred up and a brouhaha on the right and in some corners of the media today?
Well, because the fact is that the president of the United States, the former president, and his toadies do not want to face the facts. They're trying to do revisionist history on January 6th. But we cannot let us be dragged into there again.
So revisionist history, wait a minute, we just listened to history where you took responsibility and we can go consult all the times where you pretended you had none. When your politics are so performative that you have people pretending, such as in France and overseas, where president, where the figurehead Biden, we're seeing all sorts of people pushing back. Oh, figurehead Biden wasn't wandering away. He wasn't confused. Guys, we watched him shuffle away from the parachuter. We watched as the fellow world bosses noticed he was breaking away and they shuffled with him, trying to bring him back into the group. We all watched it. Some of us watched them walking through the photo op thing where they're showing the great united nature of the world bosses all walking together at this event. And we watched figurehead Biden become distracted, pointing, where do I go? Starting to veer off the path, and the same people coming and pulling him back into the herd. They're acting. They're play acting. Oh, it's okay. We're just herding the president along. When people worship government, it's because they think this is it. This is all there is. This is never more true than with so-called public health authorities. It seems that the dastardly extreme right-wingers are ginning up another series of mass diktats and attacks and lockdowns.
Just wondering, so in the event there is a positive from Milk, do we have a plan to start active surveillance in humans. I think that, you know, I'm just sort of thinking about, like, what's the next step? Are we just going to wait, or do we have something that's kind of queued up and ready to go once we see a positive? Thanks.
So, Jessica, that's exactly the protocol I was talking about in the enhanced surveillance that we're working to put together that we won't use. I shouldn't say we won't use. There's some potential ways we could use it. We could get baseline. We could do it on pigs. We could do it on avian, even though it's been done by the BC folks. So, but obviously the preoccupation is to land something so that if we do find a positive farm, we can get in there. But that's where our work right now has been focused on, trying to develop something that would be implementable around those farms. I will flag that, you know, there's the science part and the lab part and the thinking through the epi part. And then there's the enormous sensitivities around who's going on farms. Are these quarantined areas? The farmers, the undocumented workers or migrant workers, documented, like that whole sensitivity area about we are here from the government and we're here to help you, testing that has been very challenging in other jurisdictions who have attempted to do this.
Those are a group of public health officials, so-called, talking about avian flu, which was probably created in a lab, and they're telling ranchers in America, you need to get ready to kill cows. Worship of government. We'll come back into the Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We'll get to the Tower of Babbling. In a nation where performative politics, this is acting, is now commonplace, you can rest assured you're going to see tons and tons of corruption. Well, we're seeing that. We also see it, though, in the world of sport. The WNBA, as we talked about earlier this week, is a league built upon coveting and jealousy and hatred. It's a political organization that sometimes plays basketball. They made a decision early out of the gate in one of their first games in Seattle to make it an abortion fundraiser. Immediately, they said, we exist for people on the left who like basketball and are willing to go pay for women's professional basketball, which is a new sport, and who back abortion to such a degree that they're willing to wear pink and sit in seats on TV backing abortion at an expensive basketball game with a new league. So they took potentially 50% of the population, let's say it's women, and took 10% of that, and then half of them. And they cannot figure out how the league is not soaring. So when Caitlin Collins comes along, who was a college basketball phenomena, setting scoring records and rebounding records and assist records, three-point shot records, and the league has an opportunity to light up, people in a culture of corruption and coveting, like Angel Reese, decide to knock Caitlin Collins down before a play even begins. The league decides to not have their most famous player on the Olympic team. And one might argue that she has the athletic skill and the achievements to be on that Olympic team. I'm not an expert in WNBA basketball, so I don't know. Just looking at her record in college, I'd say it seems pretty good idea. But Brittany Griner, who's a felon, albeit a felon from Russia, she's not from Russia, but that's where she was charged with felonies, nine of them, she's technically not allowed to go to France, where the games are going to be played, because France doesn't let felons into their country. You think they'll make an exception for Brittany Griner? I think they will. So we talked earlier about this covetous culture at the WNBA, how it keeps them from succeeding. A former WNBA player named Candace Wiggins revealed that she was bullied for being one of the few heterosexual players in an extensive San Diego Tribune story from March of 2021.
Everybody would just seem like I don't know. Everyone had a kind of an attitude or a chip on their shoulder when it came towards me. Like, it was like they had seen me. They had been watching me, maybe, or maybe not watching, maybe just hearing. And whatever it was, there was something about me that was annoying to people, to the players. There was annoying to the coaches. You know, there was just something about me specifically that I didn't understand that people had a problem with.
And she suggested that what they had a problem with was that she's a heterosexual woman in a league that is, from the get-go, about same-sex attracted women and women who are willing to pretend men are women. The WNBA is a grievance facility, political organizing machine, pro-abortion rallying point that from time to time plays a basketball game. The NFL, of course, flirted with that, and it cost them. They got behind Black Lives Matter Incorporated, which is a terrorist group. They got behind the so-called trans flag for a while. They had their pride days. They stopped pretty quickly because there were people like me who said, I'm out. And that was a beloved game for me for many, many years. Wise people, using their own wisdom, not God's, of course. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing the supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
The president takes shouted questions. I understand, John. I've dealt with this question about 3 times already. I understand.
The Tower of Babbling.
It is the Tower of Babbling. 3 sound bites that I think prove the point I just described. The disgraced boss man of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, brags about making it easier for illegal immigrants to fly into America.
We have increased the number of refugees that we will accept from the Western Hemisphere. We have built safe mobility offices in Colombia, Ecuador, Guatemala, Costa Rica, to reach people where they are so they don't have to take the perilous journey.
They can just fly in. Illegal immigrants can just fly in. And there's no effort to overturn the Electoral College count. That's a conspiracy theory. Oh, by the way, did you see that CNN is reporting that it's a conspiracy theory that we are a republic? This is true. There was an article on CNN saying that some megatypes are pretending that we are a republic, not a democracy. They're actually said we obviously are a republic. We're a Republican form of democracy. And in the same article, they came along and said, well, the word democracy and republic have been interchangeable for some time. No, you guys are trying to make direct democracy into what we are, which is what ruined France. That's what got people's heads cut off. Remarkable. Next up in today's Tower Babbling, figurehead Biden effectively says he was a failure as a parent.
You know, my dad had an expression. He used to say, you know you're a success as a parent when you turn and look at your child and realize they turned out better than you.
Okay, hold on. Let's think about this. The figurehead is probably a pedophile, given what his daughter Ashley said about him getting into her showers with her. He is a pedophile if you observe the way he groped a young 12 or 13-year-old girl, and she has admitted, yes, he groped me. Yes, he did that to me. He is probably, well, he married the babysitter. May have been having an affair with her before that. His son, Hunter, is a tragic drug addict and con artist and unregistered foreign agent and someone who illegally sold access and someone who cheated on his taxes and someone who put himself on video illegally possessing a gun and using it during a sex act or 2 or 3 or 4. Are they better than Biden? Than the figurehead? Maybe among them, the one who is Ashley. She's not harming people actively, harming herself. Perhaps it was Bo who was best and he tragically died. Not in combat, as a figurehead continues to pretend, but sadly from cancer. So is he admitting he's a bad dad? I guess that's the question, isn't it? Last up in today's Tower Babbling, figurehead Biden once again threatens Americans with fighter jets.
By the way, if they want to think to take on government, if we get out of line, which they're talking again about, well, guess what? They need F-15s. They don't need a rifle.
Why? Why is this man talking about attacking us with F-15s? What would cause him to do that? And by the way, does this mean that we can stop sending rifles to the citizens of Ukraine? Because it happens that we're sending rifles to the citizens of Ukraine. And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
Whoa! That is news.
On a Disciple's View.
There is a lot that can happen when you have really great mentors. And there's a lot that can happen when mentors get to know you or coaches get to know you in ways that only a coach can. I've been blessed to work with the same CrossFit coach for going on, it'll be 4 years in August. And in this period of time, she has gotten to know my deficiencies so well. It reminds me of the best wrestling coaches I've had. I'll give you an example of how this can help, and it relates to our kids. I'm not saying that my coach is like my parent. She's in fact not, yeah, she's not half my age, but she's far younger than me. She's been doing this for 13 years, very skilled. She knows me and she knows that I get really, really focused, sometimes too focused, if a workout is important to me, such as it's something for they're trying to qualify for a CrossFit event. So she did this to me one day. She walked up. And she said, here's what you're going to do. You're going to get on that pull-up bar and you're going to do 20 unbroken strict pull-ups. Go. I'd never done 20 strict unbroken pull-ups as an adult. Back in the wrestling days, okay. But she said it in such a casual way. Here's what you're going to do. I had no choice. I jumped up to the bar and I did them. I was shocked. I'd been capped at 15. I jumped down from the bar and I looked at her, shocked. She goes, okay, good, let's get going. Wait, coach, can we talk about what happened? She goes, why is that a big deal? I knew you were going to do that. She gave me a fist bump. Well done. Here's what I'm excited about. Now you can trust me a little more. I knew you could do that. There's other people in that community who've been so helpful in that regard because they've seen me, like Coach, has seen me get myself way too amped up for things. I was getting ready to do a test workout to qualify for a CrossFit competition. And it was going to be a longer workout than 20 strict pull-ups. All in all, it would take me about 22 minutes of nonstop, as hard as I can go effort across five different movements. And I'm getting ready for this. I'm getting hyped up for this. And I'm doing the thing. Now, Coach wasn't there. This was the day when Coach wasn't there. It was me during open gym. So I didn't have advantage of Coach being there. And a guy I barely know but works with Coach, he came up to me as I was getting ready to do this workout. He put his hands on my shoulder, on my shoulders. And I turned around and he goes, bro, you work out all the time. Todd, this is just a workout. You got this. Just have fun with it. Like, stop getting hyped. Have fun. This is going to be fun for you. He brought me down into this different emotional state. And in fact, I enjoyed the heck out of the workout and did very, very well at it. See, when we have these mentors around us and they get to know when we have these self-limitations, they can see us sometimes at our worst, getting ourselves all concerned, all hyped up, all focused, instead of just relaxing into something. We also can have people around us who see us more accurately than we see ourselves. The lesson for me as a parent, who one day hopes to be a grandparent, is to help kids build a history of success like this. When kids achieve something, rather than focusing on the outcome, I want to say to them, I am so happy with the way you treated that. I saw you go into that with confidence. Or I saw you were concerned when it began, and now I see you're very satisfied with the outcome. I like that you decided to do that even though you were afraid. I like that you decided to complete it even though it was hard. That really makes me happy to see. It's about the effort, the quality of the effort, and the emotional state they're using as they go through it, and then capping it off. This discussion. Isn't it fascinating that God decided to create us as beings who need challenge? We need to be challenged. Isn't it fascinating that God has decided that we are not to have it easy? Why do you think a loving father would decide to create a circumstance where we don't have it easy? The question is purposeful. It's Socratic. My hope is that as kids listen to such a question, they would say to themselves, because we have to be able to do things on our own. We have to be able to work through things. Right. And I'm so happy with the way you did it. Being around mentors who observe you during times of struggle, times when you fail to achieve a goal, and they're able to speak into that, gives us this great pattern to speak into lives of kids and grandkids. Isn't it great that God gives us the ultimate second chance? We're broken, but He fixes us with His gift of redemption. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Until God decides you and I can speak again together, may His peace wash over you. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.